Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Sometimes I'm shocked by the things that people take seriously. Perhaps it's just that I've been reading so much military history over the years that I just came to realize certain things without realizing that everybody else who hasn't really spent the time doing this just isn't aware of the way that certain things in the world work. I'm realizing time and again that people who get into the white right are people who've in many cases only recently been woken up, red-pilled, and now they are digging deep into the way that the world really works. They've now understood that there is something wrong, but they don't quite know all the details. They understand that something is wrong here, but they don't realize many other things. So they focus on one thing, but they don't know how many other things work. One thing that has truly shocked me, has been the Ukraine war and the way that people look at warfare. And I thought initially, well, here we are in the age of the internet, where there is simply mountains of data coming in, data just pouring in at you from all sides, and it should be quite easy for people to understand what is going on. And instead, I'm utterly astounded at the confusion that this data has caused, that people don't know up from down, left from right, and the amount of data and the different sources of the data and the unknown reliability of the data is just making people completely miss a lot of the stuff that's going on. I'm even more horrified that the white right, which previously got things so right, for example, COVID. If you look at Trump, COVID, the white right was rocking, and the white right was on to things. And I thought that this Ukraine war would be just more of the same. People would quickly figure out this from that. Instead, I've seen levels of confusion that I've never seen before. So the first thing that I want to address today is something that shocked me. But then as I thought about it and as I spoke to other people, I began to realize that it shouldn't shock me, because this is the only thing that people know. And the more that I study things and the more that I try to understand what exactly is going on in the world and how it fits together, the more I'm starting to look on the world as a class system, that we've got multiple classes, that we've got upper classes, we've got elites and partial elites, and higher classes and upper classes. And the vast majority of us are really just middle class, slightly higher than middle class, and lower class. And anyone from, let's call it upper middle class downwards, which is really where 90% or 95% of the people are, that all of us don't really know a whole ton of things that we should know. And it's becoming more and more obvious to me that the real problem that common white people face, the real problem, is simply lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge in so many areas, and that people are freaked out and people are fumbling and stumbling around in the dark, when in fact the knowledge is there. Lots of the knowledge is in public if you know where to look. Some knowledge is a lot harder to find than other knowledge, but a lot of stuff, the vast majority of it, can be found if you dig and dig and dig. And I think that I'm starting to understand many of the problems that common people face so much better now, because there are things that I've read about in history, even in ancient history, that seemed silly. And now I look at people in this day and age and I realize, but you know what? The same problems that people had thousands of years ago are actually still here. Something that people don't realize when they read history is that the way we read history today versus the way that the common man saw things when he lived through it are completely different. So let me just unravel that a little bit. When we read about history, we read, for example, let's say in Europe, we read that there was this king, and the king had this person who was high ranking that he was dealing with, and this guy was a spy, and that guy did something else, and there was a whole linkage between a bunch of people, and this one did this, and that one did that, and because of this thing that happened with this person, something else occurred, and it had an effect on another country. You know, you'll read a whole bunch of stuff about high-level personalities, their personal lives, their personal attitudes, problems, strengths and weaknesses, and you'll see, so this guy who was reporting to Napoleon, he was doing that thing over there, and that's how that thing managed to happen. But the common man who lived in that country at that time, he doesn't know any of this. He doesn't know any of this. And this is true for everything. And this is true right up to this day. In other words, that there are people at higher levels, people of different skills, different attitudes, some are good, some are bad, some are cunning and they're busy doing this and they're busy doing that. And meanwhile, the common man in the street will never even know that most of those people exist. You'll never know that they exist. You'll never know what they did, and you won't know what happened that was good, and you won't know what happened that was bad. But maybe in 30 years from now, when those people are dead, someone somewhere will be doing some research and they'll dig into that person's life. And maybe 30 years from now, long after these events have occurred, they'll start actually writing about that person and how that person impacted history in some country or some area. But you and I living now will not know any of this. And it won't be published in the mass media. And it's only known in certain circles. Let me be a bit more specific. I once was looking into the issue, I think, of cryptography. People who break codes. When it comes to spying and breaking codes, that kind of stuff is very, very closed. You will not know what goes on there. They will write about this 50 years from now, but you will not hear about this. So, for example, I remember coming across I'm not sure if it was a documentary or something, but they were talking about recruiting people, and they were saying to the recruit, you know, when you're in this work, this is top secret. And no one outside, let's say, these four walls or this building or this section will ever know what you do. Nobody outside in the world is going to know what you do. So they say to these recruits that the best you can ever hope for is that you will be top secret famous. Top secret famous. In other words, nobody outside this building is going to know what you've done. But if you pull off something big, then this tiny little circle of people or other people in this kind of work, it is only that group that will ever know what you did. And that's it. So you'll be top secret famous in this small group. You'll be a hero. You'll be a success. But nobody outside these walls will ever know that. And it might be 50 years or more, long after that person is probably dead, that some of this stuff will be declassified. So the common person doesn't know many things. There are lots and lots of things that the common person will never know, even though it's going on around you right now. If you are living in Washington, D.C., and you're driving down the road and you're feeling bored and you're passing this building and that building, there may be all kinds of things going on that are really, really important, that are by themselves front page stories in newspapers, if newspapers were true and honest and they printed things according to its context and its value. But because it's all done behind closed doors, you'll never know. I remember when I was in America in 2019, I think we were driving up to Maryland and we passed by the buildings where the NSA is, the National Security Agency. This is probably the biggest spying organization in the whole world, the National Security Agency. They spy on everything. They spy mostly with technology, but they literally spy on the whole world. That is not an exaggeration. I read part of the history of the NSA, where in the 1960s they were using ships and planes to either sail or fly to all parts of the world, and these ships and planes had nothing but antennas, and all they do is suck in all the radio transmissions that they can find. They just suck everything in and record everything. And then they go back, and all those tapes are taken and put in computers and processed. And they were doing this 50 years ago. And they were just sucking data out of the air everywhere. They were going all across the world, and anything that they can pick up via radio, they just suck it in and they process it. And nobody even knows that a spy plane has just flown overhead, that a spy ship is on the coast, and it's sucking in data that's coming from hundreds of miles away, and every freaking radio broadcast is being recorded and it's going to be processed in computers in America. And this was more than 50 years ago. Nowadays, they've got the internet, they've got a zillion different ways to spy to levels of detail beyond imagination. I actually ask myself, if the internet wasn't invented originally, actually to spy on everybody, that the internet was invented to spy on people, because it's the perfect thing to spy on everybody. I haven't seen actual data that confirms this idea, but I must tell you that the internet comes from the military. Perhaps nobody expected that it would be as powerful as it was, or as popular as it was. So maybe I'm just getting too paranoid. Maybe it is just that this thing came out and it became insanely popular thanks to various tools that people wrote for it, like websites and search engines, which weren't originally conceived, and only later did they come and start actually spying on it and using it as a spy tool. But what I'm getting at is that the common person doesn't know most of what's going on, doesn't understand the mechanisms by which the world works, and therefore is prone to the same kind of behavior that whites and lower level common people had in ancient times. In ancient times, common people were regarded as superstitious. But the kings, the emperors, the rulers, the people high up in government, in whichever civilization it was, those people know how things really work. But the common man back then had no clue. Nowadays, we've got a lot more knowledge because there's so much more that's public. But still, people are indoctrinated and taught various things, and they are just taught basic stuff, when in fact, the real mechanism that exists for doing it is something completely different. So, for example, we live in a world where we've got democracy. And we think that democracy is just about voting. So what you do is 99% of your life, you just go and find a job and you work. And you never really think about politics, except when it's election time and you just need a couple of weeks or months or maybe even 1 week to just look at the politics, quickly make up your mind, and then vote for someone, and then you carry on working for the next 4 or 5 years, depending on which country you live in, until the next election. So it's just a case of work and then go and cast your vote. Work and then go and cast your vote. But meanwhile, politics is much more complex, and there are other things that you've missed out on, that you don't even know about. You've been trained like a dog. You've been trained to react to certain things, and this is your choice. Your choice is A or B, and that's all you need to do, and that's all you need to know. Just choose between this and that, and then move on. But in reality, people at the higher levels, the upper classes, and the elites, they know tons of other stuff. They know stuff that you're never going to know. And they know how things really work. They are the ones who determine the political parties, etc. But I'm not going to go into that stuff. I just wanted to sort of sketch out how we are trained. So you're trained, vote for this or vote for that. Nobody ever tells you that there are other things to do. Like somebody in recent years on the white right said, nobody's going to teach you how to overthrow the government. You're never going to be taught in class how to overthrow the government. So that's something you'll never know, unless you are very interested and you start reading specific histories of people who did overthrow governments. So the vast majority of whites won't know any of that stuff. Now, interestingly enough, Jews move into those kinds of things. Jews have got a much better sense of how power works, and Jews move in everywhere into all these things. But the common man doesn't know about this. So let's get to warfare. A thing that horrified me when the Ukraine war started was that everybody began talking about what is right and what is wrong, who is good and who is bad. And it took me a while to actually realize that that is how people are conditioned. In the same way that you are conditioned to vote for choice A or choice B, people are conditioned to seeing all warfare as right and wrong. When we go to fight somebody, we're doing it because it's right and the other side is wrong. And the message that you get from the government is, listen, this particular war is good. It's a good war. That's why we are doing it. Or they'll say, that war is a bad war. That's bad. Those people are waging a war, but they are bad. And so you say, oh, okay, that's bad. So we want to be going to war when it's good. Yeah, good war, that's the war you go and fight. Bad war, you don't go. And people who do a bad war, you go against them. So you are trained to think in terms of good and bad, good and bad. And good and bad is the way that the common herd of people are controlled. They are used to getting signals of good and bad. Good means we're going to do it. Bad means don't do it. And those signals are used in every aspect of society. So when it comes to warfare, when people hear about wars or they get the historical propaganda about wars, then people now think that the reason that this war was fought, the reason this war was fought was because this is right versus wrong. These people were right, that's why we joined them or helped them, and those people were wrong. So now, the common man in the street actually believes, and this is what I realized last year, the common person actually believes that wars are actually fought over right and wrong. Well, this thing is wrong, therefore we got to go and smash those people. They are doing terrible wrong things. We must go and shoot them because it's wrong. And that is how people actually see the world. And it's actually, that viewpoint is totally false. So the common man thinks that when you raise an army to go and fight somewhere, that we do this on the principle of good or bad or right or wrong. That, hey, this thing is wrong. These people are doing wrong, evil things. Therefore, we got to go and spend so many hundreds of millions or hundreds of billions, raise an army, get the artillery. We're going to have to shoot them because they are doing a bad thing. So it sounds almost like a child that's getting a spanking. Although, God knows, in this day you can't even do that anymore. So it's like, little Johnny needs to be spanked because he was a very naughty boy. So we go and we spank him because he's naughty. He's done something wrong. And we think that the army and military staff works on that basis. Oh, those people are cruel. Those people are cruel. We've got to go and kill those people who are doing that stuff because they are cruel. They are evil. Therefore, we must go and fight them. But if you actually look around you at history and at politics, you will actually see that never in the history of the world has anybody ever gone to war over right and wrong, or good and bad. This has never happened in the history of the world. And it doesn't matter whether it's pagans, or Christians, or Buddhists, or Muslims, or anybody else. Doesn't matter who you are. Never in the history of the world has anybody picked up weapons to go and fight anybody else based on the fact that they were doing something bad or something wrong. So people think that warfare is driven by just some clown-like politics. That the same rules that apply to politics and just talking a bunch of shit, that those same rules apply to war. But actually, it doesn't. Warfare and military things work differently to just normal politics. Similarly, people think that there are fixed rules of war, and there aren't. The rules of war have come about mostly among whites, and it mostly developed in Europe as a result of the many clashes that whites had with each other in Europe. So because whites fought each other and could engage in all kinds of behavior, a type of morality developed. And it came from the notion that I might win today and I might beat you at the war, at this war. But 10 or 20 years from now, we might go to war again and you might beat me. So therefore, I'm going to treat you in a certain way now in the hope that if you beat me in 20 years' time or 50 years' time or 100 years' time, that you will treat me in a similar way. So a kind of morality evolved in Europe as a result of warfare. So they began to come up with various things that when we fight, it's going to be one army against another army. And the men who are the soldiers will kill the other men who are soldiers. But they're not going to kill the women and they're not going to kill the children. So those kinds of things evolved in European warfare. And as time went by, the rules changed a bit, but they are relatively stable, and this has become known as the rules of war, the rules of Western war. But at any point in time, somebody can be naughty and they can violate parts of those rules. There is nothing firmly there that can really stop someone. So it's mostly a case of people sticking to the rules, sort of on an understanding and a kind of a trust. But if someone really wants to break it, they can. This topic comes up in Hitler and his fighting in Russia, where Hitler wanted his generals to be much more ruthless. But the generals, many of the generals did not like the idea. And so that was where they didn't always follow through on some of those things. Where Hitler saw it as necessary for victory, but they didn't think that it was good in terms of, let's call it, the morality of the generals, the morality of the army. Other people who violated this endlessly was the Soviet Union and anyone linked to the Soviet Union, as well as Communist China. They broke every rule in the book. But the notion that there are some kinds of rules in war also comes up out of the concept of what you could call a just war. This actually started a long time ago, even in ancient Egypt, but we're only going to concern ourselves with the ancient Greeks and the Romans and the Christians. So if we look on Wikipedia, then it says this about the notion of a just war. So the concept behind a just war is simply that there are some kinds of wars that are, let's call it, moral and acceptable. And it's good and you're allowed to wage that kind of war. So, for example, if someone attacks you, then yeah, you're allowed to defend yourself. If somebody just came and attacked you, somebody just came and invaded your country, then yeah, sure. You're allowed to fight them, that's fine. So that would be an example of a just war. And then somebody who attacks you for no reason at all, or for some bogus reason, other people would look down on that, other nations would look down on that and say, that's a dirty thing to do. That's an unjust thing to do. So there have been people who've been trying to sort of come up with a kind of morality for war, and the concept of a just war versus an unjust war is quite important. So let me read from Wikipedia about ancient Greece and Rome. The notion of just war in Europe originates and is developed first in ancient Greece and then in the Roman Empire. It was Aristotle who first introduced the concept and terminology to the Hellenic world, Hellenic being Greek, that called war a last resort, requiring conduct that would allow the restoration of peace. Aristotle argues that the cultivation of a military is necessary and good for the purpose of self-defense, not for conquering. The proper object of practicing military training is not in order that men may enslave those who do not deserve slavery, but in order that first they may themselves avoid becoming enslaved by others. So that's what Aristotle wrote. So it's interesting that he mentions that there are those who deserve slavery. Ha! Now there's something for you. But anyhow, let's continue. In ancient Rome, a just cause for war might include the necessity of repelling an invasion or retaliation for pillaging or a breach of a treaty. War was always potentially nefas, wrong or forbidden, and risked religious pollution and divine disfavor. A just war thus required a ritualized declaration by the thecial priests. More broadly, conventions of war and treaty making were part of the ius gentium, the law of nations, the customary moral obligations regarded as innate and universal to human beings. Then it goes on to Christian views. Christian theory of the just war begins around the time of Augustine of Hippo. The just war theory, with some amendments, is still used by Christians today as a guide to whether or not a war can be justified. War may be necessary and right, even though it may not be good. In the case of a country that has been invaded by an occupying force, war may be the only way to restore justice. So that's just to give you a bit of an insight into the fact that the notion of right and wrong in war is something that's been dealt with quite a lot in our civilization as we've tried to come up with some kind of morality around warfare. But as we know, even in modern times, we know that there are people who abuse this. That it was abused at 9/11, that it was abused at Pearl Harbor, and there are very likely many other times when fake reasons for war were invented, where it is pretended that the war is just. Oh, they came and they attacked us. We didn't see this coming. Therefore, we got to go and kill them. But in reality, we set up something so that we could walk away with that notion. I do want to just mention something about the Romans. The Romans were pagans for the vast majority of the time that they existed, and Christianity only came right at the end, right before their collapse. So I never really concerned myself with the time that the Romans were Christians. It was a very short period of time. The vast majority of their existence, they were pagans, but they were very interesting pagans. They were exceptionally religious. Exceptionally religious. They were as religious, and probably a lot more religious, than any fundamental Christian of modern times. The Romans were insanely religious. They really believed in their gods and in signs from the gods. And that is why there's this whole thing about priests, that there are these priests and they are looking into the religious aspect of this and whether the gods have given a sign and whether the gods would be angry at them, etc. The Romans went through a whole rigmarole, and it's actually very fascinating how the Romans believed that they were getting signs from their gods, that this thing has to be done in this way and that way. That just by itself is very fascinating. And it's amazing to see how these pagan whites thought and behaved. And they had very, very strict rules for their society. Rules that were stricter than anything you can get in Christianity today. So for the Romans, to declare a war was a big deal, yet they did it a lot. But they had all kinds of religious stuff that worked around it. They're actually just damn fascinating in the way that they went about things. So I'm just mentioning that because it's a very important side to the Romans. The Romans had lots of morality and stuff, lots of rules, but they're just fascinating. I found it quite fascinating to look at their pagan religiousness, and it's awesome. it's freaking great. They really are fun. They are really, really serious people, and man, they took signs from the gods seriously, and they had ways of determining certain things. They had procedures, religious procedures that they followed, and they followed it to a T. It's a whole story by itself, and I'm getting a little bit off course on this matter, but thought I'd just mention that. So, if war isn't about good and bad, and right versus wrong, then what the hell is war about? Well, you'll see that war, at the end of the day, is always about power. That war is about power. And there's a thing about warfare that you've got to remember about warfare. It is a rule of thumb that you must always remember about all warfare in all of history. It doesn't matter about the age. It doesn't matter whether we are talking about war today, war 100 years ago, or war 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. All warfare has got one thing in common. It is the most expensive thing that a state can engage in. War is always insanely expensive. All war has always been insanely expensive. Whether you are talking about having an aircraft carrier, an aircraft, a tank, a HIMARS rocket system, an artillery system, or whether you're talking about cannonballs in the age of Napoleon, or whether you are talking about a knight in armor on a horse, or ancient Greeks having armor and spears, in all of warfare and all of history, weapons of war are always insanely expensive. War is the most expensive thing that any state can undertake, always. So raising an army or getting an army ready to go and fight has always been crazy expensive, crazy expensive. It can cost more money than the state has, and the state may have to pay it off over a long period of time. Warfare is incredibly expensive, always. And weapons of war are the most expensive things you can buy. So in the days of the Romans, whether you have got armor and a sword and a shield, that stuff was freaking expensive. Interestingly enough, the soldier of modern times and the soldier of ancient times actually carries the same amount of weight. A soldier today with his backpack and his weapons and his food, etc., is no different to a Roman soldier of 2,000 years ago. He actually also had exactly the same stuff and he carried the same freaking weight. So there are certain things about warfare that remain constant in time. The weapons might change, but lots of things stay exactly the same. So returning to the purpose of warfare, wars are fought over power. There is no war in the history of the world that's ever been fought over anything other than power. It is either one nation wants to gain control of something in another nation, or somebody is being attacked and they are defending themselves and they want to remain free. Warfare is always about power. It is never about who likes whom. It's not even about who was more faithful as an ally to the other. It is actually rare. It's extremely rare, actually, for countries to be loyal to one another. There was a very interesting debate that took place in ancient Greece. I can't remember if it was the Athenians, but I think it was the Athenians. Anyhow, what it was that the Athenians had had an ally, and that ally had been loyal to them. And then this ally was attacked by somebody. So the ally came to the Athenians and said, "Listen, in the past we fought with you in this war and this war, and we were loyal to you. Now we're in trouble. We've got somebody attacking us, and we need your help." And you know, the Athenians, who were a democracy, they debated this whole issue. And they decided to not get involved. And a lot of warfare to this day works exactly like that. That you can be loyal to somebody. One nation can be totally loyal to another nation. And that nation can just ignore them when it comes to them being in need. Interestingly enough, probably the one civilization that was the most loyal to smaller allies were the Romans. The Romans were probably the most loyal civilization ever in the history of the world when it came to allies. And they had all sorts of little allies, and if their allies were in trouble, they would go and fight and help them. But you'll actually find that in modern times, that even in the age of Christianity, this stuff does not work. That when governments have to make decisions, whether it's kings, whether it's democracies, they go to war when there is some kind of benefit or some kind of threat that needs to be overcome. So they will go to war only when it benefits them. And in that case, a strong nation that is approached by a weak nation, most of the time, a strong nation will not want to get dragged into a war that's going to become a big problem for it. So let's say you have a weak nation that is invaded by a strong nation. And this weak nation goes to someone, goes to another strong nation that they were allied to. Their ally may look at this and say, look at this. This is a small country and another big state invaded them. Yes, we could fight them, but look at how much it's going to cost us and all the problems it's going to bring us. Let's rather just leave the strong nation to conquer the weak nation, and that's that. Then we don't get involved in this, and we steer clear of this. The other thing is that strong nations have got other strong nations as enemies. So if the strong nation gets sucked into a war that it didn't want to be in, it could find that other strong nations will attack it or will undermine it in some way. The world is very much a dog-eat-dog world at the national level. The most brutal place for nature is one government versus another government. This is true in Europe, and this is true everywhere, and has always been true, and nothing has changed. So a strong nation can smack around a lot of small nations and can control lots of small nations, and big strong nations have got their spheres of influence where each one of them can control lots of smaller ones, but there comes a point where big nations can clash. And if one big nation makes a stupid choice, then other big nations will take advantage of it. The world is very competitive, and the Western world is extremely competitive. I think Hitler is probably the most loyal man when it came to his allies. He behaved just like the Romans. He stood up for all his allies, and he kept all his deals. And I stand to be corrected, but I think the Germans have generally been good at looking after their allies. That there are small nations, like the Croatians, for example, who've been allied to the Germans for hundreds of years, and the Germans have always stood by them. So I think that is like one area where there is something, let's call it, that's like the Romans, where there is some kind of link where the Germans help people due to loyalty. But in the case of the British and the Americans, especially with them operating with Jews, and Jews having a massive influence on them, they don't care at all about any kind of loyalty. The British and the Americans don't function on loyalty at all. It's very much, if they can score something out of a thing, they go for it. they are actually very ruthless. Very ruthless, and they don't have that kind of moral binding that the Romans had, or that Hitler and the Germans had. So when there are decisions to go to war, it's not the same as, do I buy from this company, do I buy from that company? There are much more complex things that are involved. And people forget that there are spies and military intelligence, and they dig into all kinds of things. And they function in a world that you mostly don't see. And they know things about each other and about other nations that aren't ever published in the mass media. So there's a lot more that goes into any kind of plan to go to war. If you look around the world and you look at all kinds of history, you will see many, many examples of brutality, of cruelty, of all kinds of things being done by somebody. One nation smashes another nation. People do hideous, brutal things, cruel things, unjust things. And then you'll see that the rest of the world just sits and watches it, knows about it, and nobody lifts a finger. And that is because nobody goes to war over right and wrong. They go to war because there is a benefit. They have to see a benefit. The benefit has to be that either they get to smash one of their enemies, or that somebody is defending themselves against an invasion. But whatever it is, each nation that partakes in a war has got reasons for taking part in it. People don't just do things for no reason at all. Warfare is much more serious than business, and it's much more serious than party politics. It's insanely more serious. Another thing that people don't realize is the high level of intellect and intellectual work that goes into all things related to the military, that relates to defense, that relates to spying, that countries know things about each other, and countries wage silent wars against each other without you ever knowing about it. They are always busy spying on each other, busy trying to dig into data about each other. Spies are being hunted down, and people may even be killed quietly, and you'll never know about it. These things go on, and there are people of high intellect, high education, who are deeply involved in this. And one of the things that surprises me is that the vast majority of people are expecting everything to be blurted out on the mass media. They're expecting that the viewpoints that are put out there are correct. But in actual fact, there's a whole hidden world there. And I can tell you that when it comes to really serious stuff, it is very, very hectic. And nobody goes to war just for simple reasons. They will go to war to gain resources. They'll go to war for money, but it won't be small amounts of money, it'll be big amounts of money. But they will go to war for real benefits. There have to be real payoffs, and the payoffs have to be visible. I reckon when I look at the British and how many people the British have invaded, that Britain is a country that will kill anybody for money. If there's enough money at stake, the British will kill anyone. They don't care if you're black or white or what you are, but if they can lay their hands on it and they need to kill you, they will. I really need to get on with this Gods of War stuff, because I got to get into the meat of warfare so that you can start to grasp how much intellect goes into this stuff. There is a hell of a lot more thinking. It's much more like a chess game, and it's a serious, ruthless chess game. And the world is controlled by a bunch of strong nations. Most of them are European nations. The vast majority of the powerful nations are actually Western nations. And then we've got a couple of other goofballs that are wannabe big-time players. But these powers that be pack a lot of punch. And at the moment, America is the most militarized state, the most powerful military on Earth. It is so powerful, it can fight lots of enemies at the same time. It's insanely powerful. It's insanely powerful at sea and in the air. But on land, it's a more complex story. So what I'm hoping I manage to get across to you, even if it's not a very good explanation, is just to try and make you aware that nobody fights over right versus wrong. That every war and every time that anybody gives weapons to any country, that there always are benefits. There is always some reason, and the reason is not just political. The reason is deeper. It is either state-related or it's money-related, but it won't be small money, it'll be big money. That it's always related to something huge and important, and people don't do these things over right and wrong. And you may wonder about the concept of war crimes. War crimes makes you think, oh, this was about right versus wrong. But this concept of war crimes is actually a very bad thing, a very evil thing. I don't support it at all. War crimes is a piece of bullshit that was brought in World War II. It's a Jewish idea. It's a piece of crap. And it's to come and claim that there were crimes in war itself. All wars prior to that time, nobody ever discussed war crimes, ever, ever, in Europe or anywhere. There never was a concept such as war crime. It was a case of you fight, and when you either surrender or you reach a peace deal, everybody goes back home. And you forget all the nasty things that were done. And to me, that is a much better system. Whereas this concept of war crimes is hideous. It was used against the Germans and the Japanese, and it's horrific. And in South Africa, we also had some kind of little bit of a tribunal, but we managed to sort of wangle our way out of that. It was called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It was a bunch of bullshit, really. Just total bullshit, and it had no meaning. And it was really an attempt to just smack the whites around. And luckily, nobody really paid too much attention to it. So everything that came out of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was mostly a bunch of cover-ups. Nobody got really punished, and we kind of managed to just sort of walk away from it. So the other side, the blacks, all their crimes were also kind of hidden, and we kind of both agreed that we're not really going to do too much with this thing. But I see that they're raising it in the case of the Russians and Putin. Now me, I don't like the idea of war crimes at all. All wars involve criminal activity. A war is about killing. And there's all kinds of dirty stuff that can happen in a war. So I don't approve of the concept of war crimes. I don't approve of war crimes even for Putin. I think it's a bunch of shit, and I don't think whites should ever concern themselves with war crimes. It's a bad thing. It's really just a way of trying in another method to try and hunt somebody down and toss them in jail or execute them on some bogus nonsense. Lots of Germans were killed like this for all kinds of crap. For the Germans and the Nazis, this was just total hogwash. It was just total horseshit. The whole thing was just a scam so that they could go and kill the Nazis. It was just a scam to go and kill them based on crap. So I never support anything that's globalist. I don't support war crimes. I actually don't even support the concept of international law. I don't support the concept of the United Nations. The notion that the United Nations can come and stick their noses into the affair of your country, you should show them the finger and tell them to stuff off. This is all a bunch of bad ideas that comes from America. It comes primarily, I think it was Wilson. I think this stuff came from Woodrow Wilson, who was also actually a communist surrounded by Jews, and he was around at the time of World War I. Lots of these rotten ideas come from Wilson and Jews and various scum around him. And I regard all of this as rubbish. They created the forerunner to the United Nations, and it was known as the League of Nations. And the first thing that Adolf Hitler did when he became the Chancellor of Germany was he withdrew from this nonsense garbage, this League of Nations. All this international law and all this kind of crap, this is all just globalism and them trying to interfere in the affairs of your nation and to try and do all kinds of weird things that have never been done before. And they do it in such a partisan way that there's no ways that you can say that any of this is honest. I've never seen it work for whites, and for us in Southern Africa, it didn't work at all. We found ourselves on the receiving end of all kinds of stuff that really should have been regarded as a, quote, war crime, but because we were weak, the same rules applied as to any weak nation, and everybody watches things happening and nobody cares. Again, because no war is ever fought over right and wrong. So somebody can come and murder you and do all kinds of things to you, but if there is no benefit for another nation, they'll just make clucking sounds and they say, "Oh, we're so sorry to see this is happening to you, but we're not going to mobilize our army to come and save you." So again, those rules apply. So I've jumped around a bit on many things, but I hope it just gives you a little bit of food for thought. I will flesh out more of these things in more detail when we hit other topics. But I just wanted to do a bit of an overview, to just try to get you to think in another way, that you've got to get away from right and wrong, good and bad. It doesn't actually apply. And at higher levels, in the higher levels of the world, right and wrong don't apply. Right and wrong applies to the common man in his everyday life. That's where right and wrong apply. And that's what you've been trained for. But when you get to higher levels, right and wrong no longer applies. At the higher levels, it's a world of animals. It's nature. And it's dog eat dog. And when it comes to the national level, it's dog eat dog. It's the way it is. It's totally ruthless and nobody cares, and it's only about what can we score, what can we win. And if it doesn't benefit us, we don't care. We don't care whether they're being cut to pieces. We don't care. We'll just ignore it. We'll carry on with other stuff. There's more important business. That is the way the world really works. I do want to discuss how whites can win in the system, because there are good things in the system. There are excellent things. Roman democracy is actually fantastic. I've done a lot of digging into it, and it's caused me to totally revamp my views on democracy. I used to be very negative towards democracy, but actually, Roman democracy is the most awesome democracy, and that is what America runs on. So indirectly, that affects all of us, and it's to the benefit of us once you understand how that works. So I want to talk about other topics that are more positive, but start to understand that people at a higher level, even though we don't have terms like kings and queens, people at a higher level, mostly richer people, mostly people who are powerful, people who move in higher circles, they are another class. And unless you actually study them and understand them, you won't know how things really work. And sure, everybody gets to vote, and a billionaire gets to cast one vote, and you get to cast one vote. And by the way, so do the blacks, eh? So you cast your vote, and some low IQ scumbag also gets the same vote as you, which is unfair. But anyway, the fact is, those with power, those with status, those who are in the upper echelons of the world, they operate and think in different ways. And we might think society is classless, but rest assured, we are just the common herd. There are others above us, and they see us as the common herd, and they play with us. Jews being the biggest players of the lot. But don't imagine that the way that you think is the way things are thought about at a higher level. It doesn't work that way. But if you do understand some of it, then you can, under the right conditions, make the right arguments. So I'll discuss all these things in different ways in other videos. But just be aware. Get the notion of right and wrong away from warfare. Warfare is never about right and wrong. It's about something else. And it may be about things that you don't even know. There definitely have to be a lot deeper things going on before somebody gets involved. And I notice in the Ukraine war, for example, the British are the second biggest donor of weapons. I can tell you, the British only do things where there is money. Money's got to be there, and there may be other things that are related to it. But they do things for reasons that will benefit them. They don't operate any other way. These people are ruthless, and this is the way it works at the top. The top is dog eat dog, and it's always been that way, and it will always be that way. And there are lots of good things that come out of it too, hey? You are entering the world of nature, you're entering the world of power, and it's nasty stuff. It's vicious. It's like the lion going and munching on the zebra. It's the same kind of thing. So I think you must see in every country that there are elites. Those elites is always a smaller group of people who control the mass of people below them. That is how things work. And those people at the higher level, they think and operate in terms of power. And hidden in there is the military. And the military is the ultimate form of power. And warfare is here, and warfare will never go away. And that is a good thing. The notion of peace forever, etc., that's a bunch of bunk. That's a bunch of nonsense. And that can never be. War has its time and its place and its purposes, and war does all sorts of things. War is how things change in the world. All major change in the world occurs through war. So I'll leave you with Bismarck. Bismarck unified Germany, and Bismarck said that all the great questions of our day will be settled through iron and blood. And that has never changed, There are many reasons why it comes to that, but we're not going to go into that. So anyway, I hope this just makes you rethink the whole right and wrong, good and bad thing. You'll notice that right throughout this war, I've never concerned myself with who's doing cruel things, who's doing this, who's doing that, who's killing civilians, who's killing children, who's engaging in this. I don't even touch on those topics. I don't even think about those topics. Every war has got that stuff, and none of it is relevant. The only place where that comes in handy is for propaganda purposes, to fool other common people into getting angry. That's the only time that you use that. Is you say, oh, look at how they murdered this lot. Look at how they did that to that lot. And you use it to stir up the common man. But those arguments will never work at higher levels. At higher levels, they don't care. They look at other things, and other things that have got a physical basis, like defeating an enemy, weakening an enemy, making a lot of money, that kind of thing. There will be some bigger game at a higher level. At a higher level, nobody cares about any kind of cruelty. They'll just make noises, clucking noises, and say, oh, we're so sorry that this is happening to you, but actually they don't give a shit. And they'll never act on it. So let's leave it at that for today. We'll return to the topic of war in many different ways.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, thank the whites.